copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
In this session, we want to talk about assumptions that we all make, that we're all guilty of, and because of that, it's to our demise oftentimes as far as our organization is concerned. Here are the assumptions that we make that all of us do, and they basically to our demise. We all make them, and the first one is when we say something to someone, they immediately understand what it is we just told them. I mean, most people, you know, you think when you say something, you know, that, okay, I understand that. Let's go on. Well, if you really believe that's true, then you've never had a teenager live in your house. I'm just here to tell you. Because they don't always hear what it is that you say. You've told them over and over and over again that this is what it is that they should do, this is what they should never do, and then they do what it is that they should never do, and all of a sudden you're looking at them and they're looking like you. They're just staring in the life of a, or in the lights of a deer in the headlights. We don't always understand what it is that we've been told. And then the second thing that we do that all of us are guilty of, and that is that even if they did comprehend what you said, it is highly unlikely that they're going to expend the energy to act upon it. You see, we live in a world that basically is really driving or seeking to engage us. I mean, and it happens everywhere. You on television, you'll see, you know, five or six commercials in a row that are trying to sell you something that you may not want. Or you ride down the road and billboards are there, and on turn on the radio, there are all kinds of invitations for you to become involved in something. And basically, most of us are just too tired to expend the energy to try to figure out what it is that people are asking us to do. And so those two assumptions are two assumptions that the majority of us in the world make today. So what do we need to do about that? Well, first of all, we need to clearly explain the nature of our work and what we do and how we do it and why it's so important. We're going to develop each one of these contexts in just a few moments. And we need to provide people bridges where they can select from a wide range of ways in which they can share in our work. So what we need to do is engage people in ways that are comfortable to them. Let's go on and talk about some of these things. This is one thing that you might be able to do. Provide a means or a card where they can make a commitment, you know, the emotional component of what it is that you're doing. Now, let me just stop here for a moment and try to encourage you to think about an image. Because most of us can relate to an image. And if you're taking notes or whatever, I'd like to suggest that you do something. You know, the first thing I'd like you to suggest that you do is create a little lotion on a sheet of paper. Just make something that looks like water. And in that diagram, just write the words Sea of Prospects. In other words, this is a sea that's filled with prospects. That prospects, you know, might represent potential donors. It might include volunteers, prayer partners, you know, all the things that people can do to support us. They're there in the sea of prospects, and they're there in large quantities. I grew up in Maine, and I remember as a child, my grandfather was a fisherman, and in the wintertime, he'd go out far out into the sea, relatively speaking, at least 15 or 20 miles out from where we lived on the ocean. And he'd stay there for like, you know, 5 or 6 days, sometimes a week or two, until they filled the fish or filled the vessel with fish in its lower areas. And I don't know how my grandmother ever knew when my grandfather was going to get there, because they didn't have radios. This was back in the 40s, and I was just 4 or 5 years old. But my grandmother always knew when my grandfather was coming back. And I suspect it was because there were a lot of fishermen out there at the same time, and they were kind of talking across the water. And then finally, someone would come up and say, "Okay, tell Mildred I'm going to be back, you know, on Thursday." Well, anyway, my grandmother knew that he was going to be back on Thursday, and I'd be right at the pier, you know, waiting for my grandfather to come around the headlight into the pier or the little bay area that where we lived in a place called Cape Porpoise, Maine. Isn't that kind of an interesting name? Cape Porpoise. And he would chug along up to the side of the pier, and then they'd begin to open up the hold of the boat. And you'd look down into the hold, and I thought there were at least, 17 million fish in there. I suspect when you're 6 years old, it was just a lot of fish. But my grandfather told me, he says, you can't even begin to believe, how many fish there are in the ocean. And it left a memory with me that I've never forgotten. And I think, in the world of development, we need to understand that all the resources that we need in order to be able to do what it is that God's called us, God has given to them or has available to them. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills and the wealth in every land. And the realities are we should never lack for what it is that we need in order to be able to grow our organization. Now, if you're drawing on that little sheet of paper again, put a little hill on the, we're kind of going to call that an island, all right? And that island, is essentially where, and on top of that island, just draw a little stick house, okay? So a little house on the island in the middle of the Sea of Prospects. Okay, so the house has some windows, put a couple of windows in it, give it a door, give it a front porch, okay? And let that house remind you that this is like your organization. You're all here today because you love what it is that you do. I suspect that most of you here that are in ministry, you could do a lot of other things that probably would generate a whole lot more income than what you're making now, but you continue to do what it is that you do because you really believe in what it is that you're involved in. And you're willing to sacrifice just about anything in order to be able to help the organization of which you're a part succeed so that the people that are in there can really achieve their full fulfillment in God. And so, it's a great thing what's inside your house. But the realities are the people that are down in the Sea of Prospects, most of them don't even know that you exist. And some of them kind of know that you exist because they drove by your offices one day and they saw a sign. They said, I think that must be a cult. Or it must be something. They don't know exactly what you are, but they're kind of drawing their own conclusions, and people do that all the time. Or, some of these people, just don't even know that you exist whatsoever. And sometimes, that's oftentimes the case. You can talk about your organization as passionate as you are about it. Oftentimes people just don't even hear. They don't even listen. They don't really know, and they don't really care. So how do you go about this process of building a relationship? Well, the first step in the process, take a little arrow from the Sea of Prospects and kind of put an arrow up and put a little stick person right at the front porch of the house. Now, those are the invitation opportunities that you have in bringing people to you, and it happens all the time for you. Let's say that you're going to have a concert. The Balaz is involved in a lot of musical ministries in Hungary, and there'll be people that will come to that particular event or events that basically he hosts. And so all these people come out of the Sea of Prospects. They kind of walk right up to the front door. They stand there, and Balaz opens the door and says, "Well, listen, welcome, come in. Let me show you what it is that happens." And they kind of stand at the front door, and they're kind of looking in and peeking in, and they're thinking, well, this is, and they're kind of evaluating the organization on the basis of what it is they see. Oh boy, these guys are really talented, so they're checking that off. And boy, the nature of their ministry, music is really focused on something that's more substantive than what it is that I've ever heard before. And so they're kind of taking mental notes. And it's almost as if they're standing there in the front porch and they're kind of looking around and say, well, that must be the living room, or that must be the dining room, or that must be the great room, or the kitchen, or whatever. But we haven't invited them in. They're just standing there on the front porch, participating in something that you have created for them to be able to see and who, what it is that you do. Well, typically what happens is when the event is over, what do? They just close the door. Thanks for coming. God bless you. Good night. And everybody kind of walks and marches right down to the Sea of Prospects again. And there they are kind of floating around until something else happens. That's what happens in a majority of organizations everywhere. I can almost assure you that you have had thousands, if not tens of thousands of people that have come to your front porch and you've left them there and sent them home. And that's the way development mostly is in a lot of organizations, is up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. But you know, if you wanted to build a relationship, what would you do? If you came to my home, and we'd love to have you, if you ever come to Indiana, then if you don't have a best friend in Indiana, then you can be the best friend for Jerry. Jerry's always looking for friends. And you have a best friend in Indianapolis, Indiana, okay? So just come anytime you'd like. Well, if you came to Indiana and Balazs comes to my door and he knocks on the door, and I open the door and there's Balazs. I said, what in the world are you doing here? It's really good to see you. And the first thing I'm going to say is, well, why don't you come in, right? And so Balazs kind of crosses over the threshold. That's the little piece of board between the front door and the front porch. And he's going to come in and we're going to sit down and we're going to have some ice cream, or we're going to sit down and have a piece of pie. We're going to sit down at the table and talk and chat with one another. That's where relationships really occur. And so, figuratively speaking, how does that work and play out in your practice? There are people that come to the front porch and they never come in. So there's two terms that we use here that are really important. The first word is the exposure opportunity. So that's the arrow that takes you up to the front porch. The next word that we use is what we call the bridge. That's what takes you from the front porch across the threshold and into the foyer. We call that the bridge. That's the bridge that gets you from the front porch into the foyer. And think of it this way. A bridge is an invitation. And an invitation is something that you need to say yes or no to. In other words, would you like to come in? Yes. Or Balazs might say, well, I wouldn't walk into your house if you were the last person in the world. But it's unlikely that he would do that because he came on his own initiative. But he might say that I've got a plane that's leaving in 2 hours, but I really wanted to come and meet Sue because I think she's a figment of your imagination. Nobody's ever seen her. And so he's going to stay long enough so that he can see Sue, that know that she's really, really true and really alive and well. But he might come in and we begin the process of building a relationship. What you need to remember is that an invitation requires a rational choice. Now remember what we talked about when we talked about development? Development represents the things that we do to build rational relationships with others. Yes, will you come in? Or no, do you not want to come in? Are both rational choices. And so people, have to make a choice. And that's where relationships really start beginning, when they start making choices on your behalf and really understanding what it is that you do. Now, we have the entry-level opportunity, we have the bridge, and then we have the result of a successful bridge, and we call that conversion. And conversion is a percentage. So let me put it this way. Let's say that you have a meeting at your organization. And this is really a great meeting. You've got people from, all over that have come to hear and learn what it is that you do as an organization. And let's say there's 150 of them that come. You have 150 people that show up, and they come to hear what it is that you have to offer, and they're sitting there listening and really excited about what it is, perhaps, and so forth and so on. And then, they leave. But there are 150, let's say there are 150 people that came, and there were 70 that came to the front porch. There are 75 that came in. So what you had is a 50% conversion rate. 50% of the people that came made a decision to some degree on your behalf to come into the house, whatever that might look like practically speaking. And that's called conversion, or the conversion percentage. So what we do when we're working with people is essentially this, that if you want to assess how well you're doing is measure the attrition percentages, or whatever the case might be, this conversion percentage of the people that came versus those that did not come. And we need to conclude this with maybe some illustrations that would be helpful for you. What do you do in a situation like that? Well, let's say that I'm Balazs, since he's the person that we're picking on here today. And Balazs is the director of an organization, and it's a music organization, and I'm not going to really represent it too well, just because I don't know that much more about it other than just what it is that I just said. But let's just say that you're here, and you've come to this event that Balazs has planned, this concert that's going to be such a wonderful thing and really engaging people in the kinds of ways that only music can do that. And so I'm Balazs, now I come up and I stand up and say, I'm so grateful that you came to our meeting tonight. It's so good that you did. It was great to have you here. You heard wonderful music. You heard the testimonies of some of the young people that are a part of the concert that you heard today, and you saw what it is that God's doing in their lives. Some of you heard and saw the videos that show what we are doing, not just here in Budapest, but throughout Hungary and other places here in the Eastern Europe. You're saying to myself, man, this is just like really great. We're so impressed, as I believe many of you might be. And oftentimes when we do these kinds of concerts, people want to know a little bit more about what we're doing and would like to become engaged in some kind of way in what it is that we're doing. So let me share with you five or six ways that you could be a part of what it is that we do. First of all, this is a Christian ministry, and we are reaching out to young people throughout Central and Eastern Europe, and we need your prayers. And your prayers are very, very important to us. And so one thing that you could do, all of you could do, if in fact you have the desire to do so, and that is to pray for us on a regular basis. And if you have a little box on this material that we gave you a brochure when you walked in, you can take the perforated end of that three-fold brochure. It's perforated to make it easy for you to check it. And here are some ways that you could become involved. You could be involved becoming one of our prayer partners. We're praying for 10,000 people. 10,000 people in Central and Eastern Europe, who will pray for us on a regular basis. If you'd like to do that, we'd love to send it to you. It's a magnetic schedule, 31-day prayer guide, where you can put it right on your refrigerator door, and today is the 23rd, so you look down for the 23rd, and here's a prayer request, and we would just encourage you to pray for us on a regular basis. Now, here's another thing that you might be involved in. We have what we call a VIP newsletter, and it's what it is that, if you're interested in what it is we're doing, you're a very important person to us, because what we're doing is making a huge difference, and we have a VIP newsletter. It's basically an email that comes to you only 12 times a year, once a month, and it's a factoid that kind of tells you what's happening, throughout Central and Eastern Europe and what it is that God is doing through our ministry. And if you'd like to learn more about that, just to pray more intelligently, just check that box. We'd love to have you do that. Also, we have a newsletter that comes out. It's via email if you'd like it. It's free. Just check that. It comes on a monthly basis. And anecdotally, it tells the story of people who've basically been blessed and impacted by our ministry. So if you'd like to get that, we'd love to send it to you. Also, we need volunteers. We're going to do concerts throughout the area. We're looking for people who might want to volunteer and work with us in helping us to schedule events. And if you're interested in volunteerism of any kind, we have lots of opportunities. And if you'd like to do that, just check that box. I've just said four things, and I could say five or six more, but I didn't ever talk about money. Now, the realities are maybe they want to give money, but that's not the primary purpose. We want them. And the only way they're going to do that is to be able to invite them in ways that are going to be compatible with their interests and their involvement. So that's what bridging is. But bridging is the biggest mistake we make in development. The realities are the biggest mistake we make in development is the failure to bridge. We have brought, and I can guarantee you that you have brought thousands, if not tens of thousands of people to the front porch of your organization, figuratively speaking, and have left them there. Thanks for coming. God bless you. Good night. They walk out. Nothing happens. You're looking, it was a great event. You're thinking, well, boy, I think probably on Tuesday afternoon, we're going to see a pile of mail in our mailbox. And so we run down to the mailbox, kind of waiting for the mail to come, and nothing comes in. I was with a large organization in America, Habitat for Humanity, one of the second or third largest charity in America. And basically, I was there on the 25th anniversary of Habitat for Humanity's history. And it happened in September, about 13th, 2011. Now, you probably remember that date because on September the 11th, 2011, there was 2000...
That was 2001.
It was 2001. That's right. Because we had just moved to Indiana. So in 2001, we had this, this horrible crisis that you're all familiar with. And, this was the 25th anniversary of Habitat for Humanity. And so they were going to have their annual conference there on that weekend. But nobody could get there. The realities are all the planes were, grounded, and so the only people that could get there were people that could drive there. And so we were expecting like 30 or 40,000 people, and about 5,000 people showed up. Now we have a bit of a problem here because, you know, here we have Jimmy Carter, the president, former president of the United States. It was Jimmy Carter that came and day, and we had a lot of other dignitaries coming in from all over the country, some of whom got there, some of whom didn't get there. And but anyway, we had a really, really good group that finally came, because what we did was we contacted the governor and all the television stations and radio stations and so forth and said, listen, you know, here's an opportunity. It's been a really rough week for all of us. Why don't we come down and celebrate things that are good that are happening in the world today, and we invite you to come as our guests to a very special event, you know, in Indianapolis on that particular evening. And so people came. All 35,000 seats were filled. And I'm sitting in the front row. And, you know, Jimmy Carter comes, and Sandy Patty's a vocalist that you may be familiar with, and she was there, and they had videos of bills that Habitat, they build homes for people who don't have homes, and they showed some of the bills that were taking place in various places around the world. People that were there live giving testimonies of their experience in various places, and great music, great message. Jimmy Carter did really a very, very great job. I mean, he was trying to soothe people and talk about the better things of what it is that happened in our world, and this is one of them. And so he did a marvelous job, and I'm sitting there and I think, man, this is just one great evening. We have 35 people that don't even know anything about Habitat for Humanity. They are so excited and, you know, involved, and you could tell how excited they were. The director or the president of Habitat for Humanity stood up after Jimmy Carter had finished, and he says, "Well, I really want to thank you for coming here tonight. You know, God bless you. Good night." And I'm sitting in the front row, and I'm saying, "No!" I'm saying to my wife, I'm sitting there looking at her, I say, 25,000, 35,000 people at the front porch, and he left them there. And she's saying, "Honey, it's okay. It's really okay." I says, "It's not okay." And she says, "It's okay, Jerry. I'll drive home. I mean, I'll drive." I was not even in any position to even do. I mean, I'm like, I can't even begin to tell you how exasperated I was, how frustrated I was that could ever possibly happen. Well, you know, Sue drives home because I wasn't in any position to do that. I was so aggravated. And that we get into the house, and it's around, you know, 11 o'clock at night. So we turn on the 11 o'clock news. Well, to make things worse, you know, there's people, you know, newscasters that are standing out in front of the stadium, and they're interviewing people. "What did you think of the night?" "Oh, it was just a great night. It was such a wonderful night. Were you impressed by Habitat for Humanity?" "We were so impressed. Would you think you'd like be involved?" "I think we will." And I mean, they're saying all these things. And so now what are we doing on Wednesday morning? We're standing there at the mailbox. And no, there was not any major changes. I think we probably had a 3% increase in involvement that next year because we failed to bridge. Now, have you ever done that? I mean, I think, you know, most of you can say, we've done that a lot. We've not bridged, and we've lost opportunity. And that's something that you can't do. You just can't do that if you're going to grow an organization. And so, you know, my challenge to you is to bridge. And let me just say something, you know, if those of you that are pastors are notoriously bad bridgers. I mean, I'm sorry, but my pastor doesn't always bridge really well. He preaches a great sermon, and it's a wonderful sermon, and there's all kinds of applications that probably are relevant to me and my family and my children and grandchildren, but he never talks about those. And yet when you walk out the door, you're shaking hands with the pastor, and you're saying, "Oh, man, that was just a great message, Pastor. I mean, that was just about the greatest message I've ever heard on holiness. In fact, I think it was so great that, you know, I just think you are the best thing ever." And so he walks into his office, and he looks at his schedule, and he says, "Okay, 2018... okay, I don't need to preach on holiness until 2024. They already got holiness. Well, you're thinking, you know, I'm not sure that anybody got it. I mean, they heard it, but how could you make a difference in that conversation? You know, maybe by just saying something like at the end of the message, Let me tell you something that might happen to you this week that's going to affect your attitude about holiness. Some of you are going to be riding down the freeway, and somebody's going to come running by. They're going to blink their lights first, then they're going to toot their horn, and when they go back, they're going to let you know that they're number one, or you're number one, and you're going to say, you know, what in the world? Are you going to stand in a coffee line in your office, and somebody's going to say something that's rotten or nasty or whatever the case might be, and, you know, what are you going to do about that? Or if something happens in your home or one of your children do something, how are you going to deal with that in an attitude of holiness? And then basically give five or six things that basically are going to be triggers that sometime during this week, I am going to be tested in relationship to my holiness. But we need to bridge. We need to make a connection between what it is that we know and what it is that basically is going to meet it, how it's going to impact our lives. I just think that, you know, I watch always, and by the way, you can do this. I have a great illustration of this, because I was in church on a Sunday, a lady was actually telling me this. I wasn't there, but the lady was there was telling me this, because she had come to one of these seminars, and she'd learned all about bridging. She was just really up on bridging. She was just, and she went to church that Sunday, and they had a missionary speaker, and this guy was like out of, you know, Irian Jaya or Papua New Guinea. I mean, some really remote place in the world. I mean, he was out there serving, and he's telling his stories. And you see his kids and his pictures and dugout canoes and all those kinds of things. And here they are talking to and this lady was just unbelievably moved by it. I mean, she was ready to sell one of her children to support this guy. I mean, he was so committed. He was just like seriously awesome. And after it was over, the pastor said, well, we thank our brother for coming here today. Thank you, brother, and it's really great to have you here. All right, let's pray and send everybody home. Well, she's in the car at home, as they're driving home, she's obviously agitated. And to her husband, he says, what is wrong with you? He's I just don't believe it. I mean, I can't believe it. He brought all those people to the front porch. He never invited them in. She says, what are you talking about? Oh, he says, you don't understand that. You know, and then she begins to say, you know, and she mentions my name. And she says, I was just with Jerry, and I said, you got a bridge. And then finally he hands her the phone. He says, call Jerry. He cares. Yeah, she did. Well, I don't know if she, I think she did call me, but it wasn't right then. I think she was too agitated with him because she probably would have handed the phone to him after she got me online and say, you talk to him. But, you know, I'm sure you can think of times that you've not bridged in talking to people. Bridging is just a part of conversation. If you're discipling people, I mentor a lot of young men and that are involved in our church. And so we have a conversation, and we're kind of working on a topic, but we're going to meet again. And so I said, well, here's what I'd like you to do over this next meet. You know, let's talk about these two things. These are a couple of things that I'd like you to read before we come, and let's meet again next Thursday. That's the bridge. Now, you could come back and not have a bridge, and so basically you're having nice informal conversation that's not taking you anywhere. The bridge is the process that keeps it going, and that is a very, very important point. So, if you remember anything from my presentation, I hope that you won't sleep, and I hope you feel a little uncomfortable about the fact of that of what you've not bridged and what you've missed, because there have been missed opportunities, and they're always there. And so, bridge everything. You know, we bridge with our kids, we bridge with our grandkids. You know, in terms of, you know, okay, you know, let's take this to the next level, and constantly seeking to keep the conversation moving in a direction that basically is going to change and make a difference. Bridge is the invitation to come in, which is, you know, ways in which they can essentially participate. And we started, you remember, we started with the fact that there are two assumptions that we make, both of which are wrong. You know, number one, you know, that people understand what it is we've just told them. Well, they didn't. They didn't understand it. And number two is that even if you did, and even if they did understand it, it's highly unlikely that they're going to act upon it, because that takes energy. So what we have to create is the energy. In other words, we have to say, let me share with you ways in which you can be involved, things that you can do at home. I mean, it doesn't have to be an ask every time, but it's always a bridge, something that keeps the conversation moving in a direction that basically is toward what it is that you feel called of God to do.